Welcome back, riders. I am your host, Don Detweiler, and oh, what a cluster that week was. Robbie, how can we commiserate after that just debacle?
It's, man, I hesitate to use words on this podcast for it. It was so rough. I just want to curse. Even my healthy players didn't show up. I mean, I started Jerry Jeudy in place of Tyler Lockett, and I might as well have started Tyler Lockett. I got zero anyway. And it felt like every single one of my players did that.
I got you, man. I got a combined 11 points out of Najee Harris, Mike Pittman, and the other wide receiver I started. It's like, good Lord. Should have been 60. Turned out to be 11. Super great. Kit, I hope that your fantasy week went a little better than mine.
Yeah, I survived some ugly ones. They were definitely ugly, but I did manage to survive in most places. I'm also just a football fiend, so despite the hecticness and the ugliness, there's something very nice about four straight nights of NFL football, just zoning out and watching for hours. So did kind of enjoy that, even if we had to deal with Mark Sanchez's commentary for one of those games.
Yeah, man, between the clown fiesta that was the schedule and trying to move games that we were told were totally immovable, which, first of all, I don't know why anybody speaks of certain uncertainties in this day and age, but here we are anyway. We get Tuesday night football with the worst announcing in random calls, trying to help and just botching it. But hey, whatever. Sanchez made it through without too many butt fumble comments. So hey, good work on their part, I guess. COVID really wrecked this week in a lot of ways, be it throwing off timing or be it taking away players or just rendering players ineligible. So much so that the league decided to completely reinvent their testing protocols and who's going to be in, out, and move everything around because, you know, at this point, I just want to know, are we pandemicking or not? I don't care which, just tell me. Let us all agree. But it is what it is. And hopefully, out there, riders, you are able to adjust your rosters and at least get bodies in spots because the scoring was so strange and players popping off and coming up huge that were largely replacements. The folks who had Valdes-Scantling, good on you. If you started Amon-Ra St. Brown, hey, big ups. Because those guys won weeks for individual players when you're throwing them in an absolute desperation Hail Mary. Rob, did you make it through any of your leagues that you had going this week?
I made it through one league, and I'm grateful for that one. I made it through a dynasty league and somehow overcame the three players that actually produced for fantasy football. My opponent had Kelce, Mahomes, and Tyreek Hill in the tight end premium. And I thought I was toast going into Sunday even. I mean, I'd ridden the week off, you know, Thursday night, started drinking a little heavier than normal, and was pleasantly surprised by our Tuesday night games. Poor commentary aside. And I'm not sure if you dealt with the same thing, but at least here in Houston, I could only watch one game because they were both aired by Fox, and it was just annoying because I didn't want to watch the Philadelphia game. Who wanted to watch that game? We all wanted to see the Rams in action. Not available in my market. Boo.
In the Philly market, we had the same issue when all we got was the Sanchez game. We didn't get the West Coast game on any channel, at least that I have access to. So that was kind of a buzzkill. And over the weekend on Sunday, the only game that was available to us was the Cowboys game, which wasn't really even a particularly compelling matchup. Kit, did you guys make it? You made it through, you said, on the one.
Yeah, it was ugly. I think, like, Gerald Everett outscoring Russell Wilson and ODB combined was not expected, but definitely helped me ugly one out. So I'll take it where I can. I think I went 2-2 in my teams that didn't have buys, so the playoffs. But, you know, so I haven't advanced my most important leagues. I'm hanging in there, so it's going to be a little bit of a roller coaster the last few weeks, I think.
I went in with one team going this week. I was fortunate enough that my other playoff teams had a bye. And the one team should have had a slam dunk and instead got slammed. So it was one of those deals where Josh Allen did his part and everybody else threw in their worst single scoring week of the year. So thanks all around, T. Higgins. Solid work for me, buddy. Part of that 11-point debacle that should have been about 60 between them. Between difficult schedule, difficult weather across the nation, and difficult, well, just everything, we will roll into week two of the playoffs for just about everybody with basically situation as is. And situation as is means that COVID continues to be a factor. Do we think KC and Pittsburgh gets moved because of KC's current situation, Kit?
So I'm still a little unclear on, like, I think I read the specifics, but I don't know what it's going to mean practically in terms of, like, what it means for vaccinated players coming back quicker. I know that was the intent of the changed rules. I just don't know how frequently that's going to actually affect availability. I would think, given it's Kansas City, you know, all the prime players are out, they would want to move it. But I think that creates just as much of a conundrum, right? I mean, if they move the game, let's say tomorrow to Tuesday, you know, and you have a Tyler Lockett situation, what do you do with Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce while you're waiting to see, you know, on Sunday, they might not be ruled out yet or in yet for the Tuesday game, but you might have to make a decision. So I think it's going to be ugly all around. I almost actually prefer it stay where it is, and we just know whether they're going or not. But the way the NFL is about their product, like, I could definitely see them moving in if it gets to be ridiculous.
So, I mean, where do you think the line has to be, Rob? When do they have to make the call to actually move this thing, or just, like, suck it up, Buttercup, you're doing it?
My idea would be to I don't want to watch another Tuesday game, another Mark Sanchez thing. I'd rather see the backups in the A-team commentary and see some of the backups that we saw this weekend show up, some of these practice squad guys do well. Unless it's an absolute pandemic, like, unless you're signing 10 guys off the practice roster, let's go. There's got to be some sort of limit. Everyone's disadvantaged at this point. It's an equal opportunity thing, even though some cities are getting hit a little worse than others. So, I mean, let's play football and let's do it on Sunday and Monday so my wife can not fuss at me about the TV. I don't like watching football on my phone on Tuesday nights, but here we are.
You know, I got to say it as a Steeler fan. Like, last year, we got jobbed and we were like, oh, too bad, so sad, button up. And now living in the Philly market and it being the WFT that had all the problems, Philly basically was missing, like, two backup dudes. And they're crying like, oh, play the game. Like, welcome. See, now last year it was, oh, quit your complaining. And now it's, oh, woe is me. Well, join the crowd.
That's how it is in one of my leagues, too. I'm a commissioner in a league, and I threw out there adding a second IR spot for a redraft to deal with the COVID outbreak last week. And unanimously, it was, we don't want to do anything that could potentially benefit you. Regardless, I had zero guys on COVID minus Tyler Lockett. I forgot about Tyler Lockett. I feel like he popped up a little late after we voted. And now this week, after I've been eliminated, they're like, hey, I've got like five guys on COVID. Like, we are not even putting it up for a vote here. And we'll see you guys next year.
Way to go. 1, 2, 3, screw Rob.
Yep. That's generally the name of the game. You know, they got to try and take down the best player in the league.
I'm particularly torn as a manager that kind of depends on the Kansas City players quite a bit, but a Steeler fan, it's like, do I want them to cameo in the playoff or do I want my fantasy wins?
Right.
It's like, I guess I win either way, maybe, depending on how you look at it, but still.
Until Byron Pringle lights you up and you lose anyway.
Oh, dude. It'd be like Byron Pringle or Mecole Hardman figures out how to catch a football finally. Or it's just CEH has the monster day because Steelers can't stop the run. Who knows? You never know. And the NFL this year is even more of a messed up deal. But keep your ears open, riders, because you're going to have to be hyper vigilant. If you're still in it, be in it to win it. Watch the waiver wires. Watch everything so that you know up to the detail when guys are going to be in and out, if they come back right before games, so you got your players in the appropriate lineup spots so you're good to go in case of last-minute adds or drops or late calls of, oh, no, this guy's back or out. A lot of the time, we don't know the vaccination status of individual players, so we don't know when they're going to be coming on or off of COVID IR. So it's going to be interesting to see how it all plays out. We're going to have to do the best we can. And speaking of having to do the best we can, oh, the Bucks. Oh, the poor Bucks. Every skilled player that's not Tom Brady is dead. No, not dead, but really banged up. Chris Godwin blows out an ACL in fantasy playoff and right before the end of the season. So it's definitely going to affect him going into his free agent time for the early part of next season, for sure. Does this cost him a boatload of money, Rob? Or is it actually an inroad back to Tampa?
I think it might be an inroad back to Tampa, but I think their priority is going to be Leonard Fournette once again, not so much signing Godwin again. So if he gets the right offer in the open market, I think he's gone this time around. I think this is good news for Tampa. The price just dropped a little bit. So I think it'll be good things for your Godwin shares. He's either going to stick with Tom Brady or he's going to probably be the you know number one weapon wherever he ends up.
Kit, does this, you think, turn into somebody just bites the bullet and pays him anyway? Or is this like the one-year prove-it deal to get yourself right, reestablish your value, and then go back into free agency?
Yeah, I think that's going to be on him. I think there will be suitors, you know, who are willing to pay him basically what they would have paid him, or they should be, right? I mean, if you can get, especially if you can lock him in, get any sort of discount at all. ACLs are becoming pretty commonplace. It's late enough in the season that I don't expect him to be, you know, 100% week one, but he wins with great route running. He's really come on the second half of the year. So I would say it's probably on him. You know, if he says, hey, I want to come back, you know, try to win another one. If Tom Brady sticks around, he'd really become Tom Brady's favorite target strongly in the last sort of month or two. So maybe he does that and then goes out and tries to get his big deal after having a, you know, a monster second half or something like that. But I don't think there'll be a shortage of suitors. I think there'll be teams out there looking to give him, you know, full on wide receiver, big payday money.
Desperation is a stinky cologne or a bad cheese. And like that, for whom the bell tolls, rolls right back into Tampa. Lev Bell showing up here. We get former Steelers or the ghost of Steelers past now with AB on that roster in some form of limbo. And now Lev Bell rolling into town. Do we care about Lev Bell, Rob?
I do in that he needs to be rostered in dynasty leagues. But for now, this is Rojo's backfield. He's going to come in. It's going to take him a week or two to get up to speed on the playbook. He's probably, you know, he's in shape. He's not necessarily in game shape at this moment in time. So I think there is a small role for him, but at least this week it's Rojo.
Kit bearing the loss of Godwin, does this mean AB's double secret probation magically ends?
Yeah, it sounds like that already was something that the Arians has said is happening. You know, he's coming back. Now there's things that, like, his ankle might not be ready yet. Maybe he needs to get himself back into shape, but it sounds like, you know, they're saying the things. He's saying the right stuff. He's going to post a video of himself getting vaccinated. Who knows? He's proved to be a very unreliable individual in the past. But yeah, I mean, I think sort of as out of necessity, he steps in. He's the one. You know, Gronk's going to get more targets. And some of those younger receivers, I think, could also step up. Brady showed a penchant for targeting him, even when the other two big guys were there. So I think he sort of, if he's in shape, if he's ready, he steps right in as the number one receiver for them for the next couple weeks.
Well, Evans is still hopping along. We'll see what happens with him. But yeah, you're right. I mean, AB, if they can get healthy wheels out of him or even 70% of AB, that's probably better than 100% of whatever else is just kind of floating around.
For Rashad Perriman, still on the COVID list. So it's two young guys, half of Mike Evans and maybe AB.
Miller, what is it like? Tyler Johnson is still on that roster. There's some
Scotty Miller.
Yeah.
Outside digging, of that, not a lot.
The moral of the story is digging deep. Hopefully Gronk can get right and Cameron Brate can continue to roll on a little bit here for them. But it's definitely going to be tough sledding. As far as some people are concerned, it couldn't happen to a better crew of guys, right? But we'll see. Go Bucks, go. They still have a pretty good road. They still basically control their own destiny and they're still probably going to get in. So if there's even any kind of modicum of health, the road got harder, but it probably still pans out for them one way or the other. Speaking of roads that didn't go the way anybody anticipated, the Lamar Jackson injury ended up being it might be a week to now it's two complete games that he missed. But, oh, the surprise is Huntley is actually pretty darn good. What are we seeing from him, Kit? Like, just give us the rundown. What's Huntley doing that's working?
Yeah, I mean, I think they did a really good job of drafting someone and sort of training him up to be very similar to what Lamar does, right? I mean, he seems to know that offense. They basically do a lot of the same thing. I mean, a few less designed runs for the quarterback, but not a significant difference there. They're a team that likes to run the ball. He seems to really master the offense. You know, I know he's smaller. You know, he doesn't have a huge arm, which is sort of the standard things that sort of, you know, hold guys back on the draft side. But he's showing enough that I think he's an exclusive right free agent. So it's going to be a while before anybody gets a crack at him unless they want to trade what I would imagine is pretty significant draft capital, because he's showing the Ravens why it's valuable to have a good backup right now. But yeah, I think, you know, a couple more games like this, he's going to line himself up for be either a big trade candidate or eventually have a shot at a starting role long term.
I think that's interesting. And Rob, let's explore that a little bit. Do you think he's like the new Matt Flynn, who has this like flash in the pan, shows real well, and some team just falls in love and decides they're going to throw some capital at him to try and get him from the Ravens? Because that's like the most Raven thing ever. Develop a guy, expose him just long enough so you get a tease, and then sell him high.
I think that's only happening on the defensive side of the Ravens. I don't think anyone's given Tyler Huntley starting money or a crack at the starting job next year. I think he's shown what he is. He's an NFL backup. He fits Greg Roman's scheme very well, which not a lot of offenses run that, but it's something that Lamar Jackson and running quarterbacks with huge rushing upside work in that offense. And he's certainly excelling at checking the boxes. He's had a little bit of time in the system, but I don't think he walks in anywhere else and competes for a starting job unless Greg Roman's going to be a head coach somewhere.
Yeah, let's start with nobody does the same thing as the Ravens anywhere, and nobody's really going to because you can't replicate Lamar Jackson. And I think what he did was not necessarily make himself a tens of millionaire, but set himself for probably 10 plus years, because if the Ravens have half a brain, he's demonstrated to be an excellent insurance policy for what Lamar does. And fits right into the offense effectively. So if they're smart, they're probably going to give him premier backup money for the foreseeable. As long as they're going to keep Jackson, they should probably keep him, because he's one of those dudes who now, look, guys who expose themselves to hits are going to get hit. And as a byproduct, are eventually going to miss time. It's just going to happen. It's not necessarily their fault. It's a consequence of doing business. So you'd best have a backup in the right mold who can run your offense. And now that he's shown that he can do it, he's demonstrated significant value to the Ravens. So no, you don't have to fall over yourself trying to get him in dynasty formats. But if you're a Lamar Jackson manager, then you probably want to try and watch your waiver wires or something, or over the offseason, throw a fourth at somebody to try and get him, just so you have that handcuff and just so that you are set. Because Jackson is going to be like your QB1 or QB2. Perfectly excellent to have him on your setup.
And you're for out of the playoffs. I mean, throw all your fab at him if he's still somehow not rostered. I know waivers ran today in one league, and he was only available in one out of my five dynasty leagues. I had $12. I didn't get him, but it was worth a shot. Instead, I got Jake Fromm for like $2, which is not nearly the consolation prize I hoped it would be.
Still worth it, though. It prevents somebody else from getting a spot start, and that may be important.
And you never know what happens in the offseason. Greg Roman could be a head coach. That lottery ticket could pay off.
You never know. And speaking of never know, turns out we did know. For those of the riders who listened to us last week, we were basically sitting here saying, yeah, Urban Meyer's on borrowed time. Yeah, you didn't exactly have to be Nostradamus. I'm pretty sure Nostradamus's lesser-known cousin knew that was coming. And as I'm sitting there Thursday, and trying to edit the pod news breaks, I'm like, no, edit faster, get to publication. Here it is. And so now we look at a post-Urban life for the Jags. As a surprise to no one, the Jags have decided to fire him with cause and therefore not have to pay out his mahusive salary for the rest of it. Now, that's going to get lawyered around a while, and I'm sure he'll get some money, and I'm sure it'll take some time, but a settlement will be had. But what's really important now is, out from the yoke of Urban oppression, is one number over one overall quarterback, and more important probably is one number one running back for that squad that went from fantasy irrelevant to fantasy relevant overnight with one stroke of the owner's pen. So here we are, interim coach Daryl Bevel, who was calling plays, now moves aside for Brian Schottenheimer to call the plays. Kit, what does this do to that offense?
I don't know. At least they're willing
to. Yeah, no one knows.
Those aren't inspiring names, I guess, either. You know, I think Brian Schottenheimer most recently got fired for not doing enough with the Seattle offense. So I think, you know, what it means for this year, you probably can rely on James Robinson because they look like they're just going to use him, which was something, for whatever reason, Meyer was gunking up and making bad. You know, long term, I think we don't know what this means for Robinson and Lawrence, except it's definitely better. Like, they need to make the right steps after this, but at least they're not actively hurting their careers and development, which is what I basically felt like was happening for 14 weeks under Meyer. So, you know, still very much TBD in terms of, you know, do they get the right people in there? Do they start having the right type of offense for the personnel, all that? But again, they took step one, which is a good start.
Well, to give us some bonus coverage on this, we add our friend, one, Kyle Allen. Welcome, Kyle. Glad to see you here on the Rod Pod.
What's going on, guys? Sorry, I think I'm past fashionably late. Sorry, I'm just super duper late. Beyond technical difficulties of just getting a computer started, I somehow read Rob's message as we start at 8:30, so I started booting up at about 8:20, and here I am 24 minutes later, but also 44 minutes late. So my apologies.
No worries.
Thanks,
man,
for having me on tonight, guys.
It's always good to have a member of the next man up in the house, because now you can do your own plug and I don't have to.
Well, hey, I appreciate it. Yeah, if you're looking for injury news, especially coming into the playoffs and as the playoffs are going on, we're your guys, the Next Man Up Injury Podcast.
Super appreciate it. Yeah, they're real medical professionals that do better than it's bad, because that's about what you're getting out of me. Yeah, if you need if you need actual information and not just our random gibberish, they're the guys to talk to. The Next Man Up Podcast is there for you. And we're basically talking about what's happening now in Jacksonville and how the coaching change has brought back to relevance one number one running back in Jacksonville, and hopefully maybe some actual improvement out of a number one overall pick. So what are your thoughts on the Jacksonville offense here?
Yeah, I'm hoping they can certainly make a good turnaround. I think the only person that's upset about Urban Meyer leaving is maybe Laquon Treadwell, because he seemed to randomly start getting some work out of nowhere in the past couple of weeks. But no, all jokes aside, I think James Robinson's usage, as you probably alluded to, will certainly see an uptick. And I'm just hoping they can get in a good head coach that has a decent head on his shoulders and can kind of point Trevor Lawrence in the right direction, because obviously the talent's there and we're excited to see what he could do. And then Urban Meyer's just, obviously he was not the right fit, not the right human being altogether for that job. So it would be nice to see them make a good hire this offseason that can support T-Law well.
No, so very true. Now, Rob, as the lawyer in the house here, I know you're not that kind of lawyer. Do we think Urban gets some bucks out of this, or is he just gone and invited to go away forever?
He's certainly going to get some bucks out of it. There'll be a lawsuit filed. They'll settle. 95% of cases settle. The judge is going to do everything in his power to not have to deal with these shenanigans. Maybe there's an arbitration clause in it where this won't even see the light of day and not end up in court. But I would love to see a lawsuit filed so we can all read Urban Meyer's stupid contract. I hope he doesn't get a penny. I hope it was well written by Jacksonville's legal team. Yeah, save the money on Urban Meyer and expand the Jacksonville pool, because you're still going to suck next year, Jacksonville. Just entertain us a little bit more on the off-field stuff.
Dude, I love it when they have like dog day in that pool. That's the best.
You know who doesn't love it? The grounds crew. Can you imagine cleaning out those filters?
That can't be all that much fun for them. But hey, I guess as long as the check's cash.
The dogs are cleaner than a lot of Jacksonville residents, so I don't know.
Oh, I knew it. I knew
fair
the
point,
coming.
Sir. I got to get
it. It was coming. So if the day and the season ended today, which for Jacksonville it might as well, they would have the 101 again. The interesting thing becomes they were looking like they were going to be shut out of the top two picks, but now here they are possessing 101. Do they have to take one of the DNs, or is it O-line or bust now? Kit?
Two DNs are considered the top two prospects, if I understand correctly. I would be looking to trade out. I mean, you know, it's not the number one quarterback type capital that you could get, you know, in most years. I mean, maybe someone gets crazy about Corral or Pickett. I don't really see that happening. I think likely it won't be a 101 quarterback, but it's still the 101, right? It's your chance to get your guy. So if you could pick up, you know, something in the top 10, which is where I think some of the first couple linemen will go, and then an extra first. I mean, if you get like eight and an extra first, that's kind of like, I think on the trade chart, some seemingly fair value. I would be all over that, right? Because I do think line is what they need. O-line is what they need more. And if you can just, you know, they're a type of team that you need to be picking up extra draft capital to fill in the many holes their roster has.
Kyle, same question.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. I feel like it's either go ahead and go with the defensive end. It wouldn't hurt. I mean, who doesn't
need
like
that too?
Yeah, who doesn't like a good pass rush? And I mean, you can always get an offensive lineman later. You're not going to get Kayvon Thibodeau later.
Very true. Robbie, same question.
I lean, you know, take a D lineman. They need talent. He's the best player on the board. They literally need every starting position outside of running back and quarterback. So why not take the best player available? You get a potential franchise changing defensive end. It improves your defense from day one and continue building. They've got an early, you know, they'll have the 201. They can take an offensive lineman there and improve. There's free agency. They should have a lot of money to splash around this offseason as well.
If I'm them, I'm calling the Giants and saying, hey, how bad do you want a DN? Because you got like 5-7. Come on up.
Yeah. I'm a Giants fan. I do not want, as much as I do want a DN, I don't want that. But
do we think anyone's desperate enough for Matt Corral to trade up? I feel like this isn't the year, but teams always get desperate when it's time for quarterbacks.
Yeah, as the draft guy, I think I'll field that one. And the answer to that is, without going into silly season yet and seeing all the independent workshops and all the staged workouts that make your guy look like abject money, I would say no at this point in this year. But hey, somebody could fall in love. We've seen it before. We'll see it again, where somebody sells the farm for something they got to have. Just ask Frisco how turning over 3 first-round draft picks goes, because they just did it to hop way down to way up to get themselves Trey Lance, who played a whopping like game and a half this year. Now, look, jury's way out on him. He may very well be excellent. He was always getting in the redshirt year, but the case stands. When somebody falls in love, especially at the quarterback position, heaven and earth gets moved. So I'm not saying they should, but I'm not saying it's not possible. Speaking of things that shouldn't really be possible, Cooper Kupp has had the ridiculous season of seasons and has been an abject man beast. This has to be the zenith of Cooper Kupp's career, because I don't think anybody else is going to get anywhere near what he's doing this year. And I don't think he'll do it again, at least at this level. This has to be the best we've seen and will see, right, Rob?
I think certainly for fantasy production, it does not get better than what Cooper Kupp's doing this year. He's destroying the NFL and making every DB look absolutely silly. I don't think it'll get better for the foreseeable future. It definitely ranks up there as one of the best seasons of all time.
Kyle, he's got to be like the happiest dude in the world to get a legit quarterback on that team.
You read my mind. That if you asked me the first question, that's exactly where I was going to go. Is I feel like it's the addition of Stafford that's really made a difference for him, and I don't think that that's really a stretch to say. It's pretty apparent that he's the difference maker. While I agree that I don't think he'll have the exact same production in the future, I fully expect him to be a top 5 wide receiver candidate, as long as he and Stafford are a tandem.
Are we worried at all about his age, kid, or is this like one of these dudes who has a game that can just grow?
Yeah, I mean, eventually he'll slow down, but I don't think he's too old. So I don't know if he has 5 years of wide receiver one production, but I do think he has the type of game that ages well, right? I mean, he's fairly explosive, but really a technician, great hands, do all the stuff that generally does age fairly well. He's not, you know, winning on speed and leaping ability generally. So yeah, I want to point out his next 2 weeks he has Minnesota, who have the 32nd ranked pass defense, and Baltimore, who has a ridiculously banged up secondary and has been very bad against the pass. So if you got him for fantasy playoffs, good on you.
You're very lucky there. And if you're in the top seeds, you probably do have him. So there you go. What do we think about Bobby Trees coming back? I mean, we know it's an ACL plus. We know there's damage there. Kyle, what's the long term on him?
Yeah, I haven't looked at his injury outlook in a while, but obviously he's out for the rest of this season. But looking forward, he's an older receiver than Kupp. Obviously, older players don't recover as well. I don't expect him to have the same ceiling that he's always had, especially with Cooper breaking out the way that he has. And the emergence of Van Jefferson in that offense, I think, kind of puts a dent on his ceiling. But as far as a guy who's always been a target hog in his career, I feel like Robert Woods could still have some value, but I think he goes from being a perennial wide receiver one, wide receiver two candidate. He's going to be more of the wide receiver two / flex. If I have him in a dynasty league, I'm not actively trying to move him, because you're probably not going to get much for him. I'd rather see him come back for a year, see what he can do. And then if he's got good value, but I'm not a contender, I'll go ahead and move him at the end of next year.
Yeah, you're absolutely right on that, especially because, I mean, the Rams don't believe in having draft picks, so it's not like somebody new's coming in to fill that spot. He's going to walk right back into the probably wide receiver two, even wide receiver three role. It doesn't really matter in the way they were moving interchangeably with Van Jefferson at the beginning anyhow. Those guys are probably going to be about the same dude.
Yeah, I feel like OBJ was just kind of the bookmark until he can come back, and when OBJ walks this year most likely in free agency, then it's Bobby Trees' time again.
Yeah, I mean, if they have the cap to bring him back, good on them. They probably don't. He's probably going to want to at least try to get paid. We'll see if that even happens. Who knows? But long-term outlook, though, OBJ has come in and actually look like a player again, Rob. Does that kind of recoup some of his value going into his free agent year?
Not after this week. Not after this week, OBJ. The 2 targets, 7 yards. You're dead to me, sir.
Who would you rather have next year, Bobby Trees or OBJ?
Robert Woods. Give me Robert Woods.
Totally agree.
Yeah, that's all day, every day. All right. The last one we can really mention, and the last bit of news here, is the charge, because Eckler is now looking like he's going to miss. Does Jackson become the main guy here? Is he a viable start? Can we like trust him in San Diego? Nah, did it again in LA. Kit.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I think it's going to be him, and I hope that Kelly's goal line fumble was the nail in his usage coffin. He's been awful ever since he touched the field, and for some reason they were still kind of alternating him behind Jackson with Roundtree. But I think it'll be Jackson and Roundtree. Jackson looked good last year, and if you look at his career, it's sort of always been a little bit of a favorite of mine. I liked him at Northwestern. He's kind of an outspoken guy about things I care about, and that always had a good yards per carry average when he gets work. So the big thing is, though, they're playing Houston, who makes everybody look like a star running against them. Rashad Penny had his best game in 3 years, not last week, the week before. So, you know, I think if he can get 15 carries, three catches, you know, he could be in line for a great spot start, RB2. Yeah, and, you know, obviously if you're an Eckler owner and you have him, you're not happy that Eckler's going to miss, but you could hopefully get 70% of that, although he may lose goal line work to Roundtree or Kelly.
Yeah, and I would have to presume it's Roundtree, the rookie coming in from Missouri, was definitely in that bigger, tougher runner mold and is everything that they wanted out of Kelly and never really got. So let's move on to the real meat of the deal here. And we were going to look back a minute because this week was an absolute WTF from the fantasy football gods. Let's look at real NFL for a moment here and check out some of the division races, because honestly, they're crazy this year. What we thought were absolute locks have now, front runners have fallen back to the pack. Everything has changed. So let's start now with the AFC East, where the Patriots and their rookie quarterback. Yeah, here we go. TB who? Yeah.
That's great.
It's the Jones show now.
Two phones, Mac Jones, baby.
And he looks good. You put him with some real wide receivers, and it'll be super interesting to see what he can develop into. I mean, the drops are killing them. And yet, here they sit, 9-5. Darth Hoodie looking Darth-ish as Sith Lordy as ever. Kyle, what's their outlook? Are they fearing the Bills, or are they got them where they want them?
Bill Belichick proved in that wild game in Orchard Park a couple weeks ago that he's still got it. He can coach with the best of them and outcoach just about anybody, especially on their turf. They lost their first away game this week, which kind of hurt my heart that they weren't going to finish the season perfect on the road, but these things happen. They show they can hang with the Bills. Obviously, an exceptional game from all standpoints, not a normal offensive game from either side, though. Neither side could really throw the ball. Obviously, the Patriots have a much better running game, so I would expect them to be better in that game. I'm really looking forward to this week. I think it's going to be a great matchup. Worst case scenario, we split the series on the season, but I'm optimistic. I think that Mac Jones might have a turnaround game and get the ball rolling. Hopefully Damian Harris can get his hamstring healthy and get back to it this week after missing last week too.
Rob, we're still at the point where we can't trust the New England running back, but Buffalo doesn't have any. So this game's going to get very interesting because somebody's got to run a football, right?
Someone's got to run the football, and someone will. It's December in New England. I expect the weather will not be great. I have not looked at the scattering reports ahead of time. Maybe Kyle can shed some light on that. But it's December in New England. It's a division game. It feels like a low-scoring Bill Belichick's going to game plan and limit Josh Allen's possessions kind of game. Maybe you don't want to start a lot of wide receivers in this one. And interestingly enough, I mean, I think whoever wins this game takes the division because they both have cupcake games after that. I'm looking at the schedule here. The Patriots get the Jaguars and the Dolphins to finish the season. The Dolphins are at least somewhat competent, but I expect them to win that.
Is it at the Dolphins? Or is
at
it
Dolphins?
Dolphins.
Can they do it again?
That's a division game too. It's a division game. Yeah, Foxborough. Yeah, Foxborough. It's a high of 40, low of 25 on Sunday with a 40% chance of precipitation. It's not going to be as windy.
All right,
but there's a chance we could get a little wintry mix in there.
Yeah, that sounds like a Ramadre Stevens day to me.
Money Mondre time.
Also sounds like Josh Allen's backyard. Maybe he can still get it done if it's not too windy.
Maybe.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. Dad'll be there in his Tom Brady jersey, I'm sure.
We'll see how that leg is. If he could be their prime rusher and actually be productive, we'll see. But that's got 1913 written all over it.
Hey, that's high scoring for that matchup this year.
It is. Kit, here come the Finns. Tua on fire, dare I say, en fuego. Mike Gesicki looking like an actual weapon. Maybe Jalen Waddle really looking like a weapon is what I should say. And now that Devonta Parker's back, you've got two actual wide receivers that function and do things in Miami. Is it fear the Finns?
I don't know if it's through the Fins. They've had quite the mixed bag of opponents looking back. I mean, they did beat the Ravens in there, but otherwise it's Texans, two Jets, Giants, and Panthers on their six-game winning streak. So I think that has as much to do with their winning streak as, you know, the resurgent play of their players. To finish out the season, it's not that. I mean, we mentioned the Patriots are in there, right? But it's Saints and Titans the next 2 weeks, two teams that are competent, but sort of reeling in their own rights to some extent, trying to figure things out with their lack of personnel. So I could see them stealing one of those and then it coming down to New England. I can't say like they scare me. They're not doing anything exceptionally well, but they look like a competent football team that, like, you know, going out against another competent football team, you give them a coin flip chance.
Another tough one. And this could come down to last game of the season there, week 17 in South Beach for the division. It could. Let's just pretend. So, all right, who wins it? Who's got the division? Who's got the East? Kyle, go first.
I think the Patriots pull it out. They're going to finish strong.
Rob?
I'll take the Patriots, unfortunately.
Kit?
I'll take the Bills. I still think they're a better team. They could definitely, Bill could junk it up and win the game and you know, make me look like a fool on Sunday. But if he doesn't, I think the Bills do have better talent on their roster.
No Cole Beasley this week, but still, go Bills, go. Nobody circles the wagon. Speaking of circling the wagons, the entire division in the AFC North is still in the chase for what it's worth. From 7-7 Cleveland at the bottom to 8-6, this feels weird, Cincinnati at the top. Everyone's got a shot, and they all play each other coming down the line. For Pittsburgh, it ends in Baltimore last week of the season. The Browns, who knows? The Bungles, who knows on a given week? This division's just a mess, isn't it? Kit, tell me about it.
Yeah, it really is a mess. You know, it's tough. Like, different teams have looked better or worse throughout. I watch a lot of Steelers being here in Pittsburgh. They've done some things well, but I think they've mostly played some ugly football. I'm not inclined to give them the sort of step forward as the team to make it. And the Browns are playing well. They look like they were, like, you know, running and playing decent defense for the first couple months of the season. And that's kind of gone out the window with Baker kind of spiraling downwards and then sort of the COVID stuff that's happened the last couple weeks for them. I still think it's the Ravens. Cincinnati has been plucky. They have great, you know, offensive weapons, but I kind of just expect them to choke because historically they do that. So if I had to bet, I would bet on the Ravens, but Lamar and sort of the defensive talent might not be what it used to be, but the Lamar and the offense can carry that. Yeah, they would be the team I'd vote for, but wouldn't be surprised really if any of it happened. It's going to be fun to watch some of these slugfests down the last 3 weeks.
So Kit, who's your winner?
Ravens.
Rob, who's your winner?
Ravens.
Kyle?
I got the Ravens, too, if they can stay healthy. Obviously, they showed that Huntley can get it done when Lamar is not there, but I feel like when the playoffs wind down, it's got to be Lamar, and they got to keep healthy receivers on the field. Obviously, the running back room is a hodgepodge, but that's not changing.
What makes a difference for me is I think Baltimore can win with their injuries. I don't think Cincinnati can. Cincinnati's like a vintage BMW. If, like, one thing goes wrong, the whole thing just falls apart, and Joe Mixon isn't healthy right now. I think they're going to continue struggling on offense, and I don't have any faith.
Yeah, they're a team that arrived a little too early.
Zach Taylor
just ahead of things. They're going to be good. They're just not quite there yet. They're just not deep enough. I got Pittsburgh to win it because why not? Because who even knows? It's a mess, and I'm just going to go homer on this. Ben gets his playoff entry in his swan song, and then he goes and rides off in the sun. Please. And we'll see what happens. On to the South, the AFC South. And Rob, we've got an interesting dynamic here. The Texans are awful. The Jags are same. Colts, well, they can't throw the ball so much, but they can run real good and play really good defense. And the Titans are look like world beaters and now are getting beat by the world. What happens here in the South?
I'm looking at the schedule as we speak here, but I think the Colts win it. The Colts have been on a tear recently after a slow start to the season. Whereas the Titans are dealing with Derrick Henry, Julio Jones. They've got a lot of missing pieces on offense, and I just think the Colts have it in them. But they have a tough schedule to finish the year. The Cardinals, well, not that tough. Cardinals, then the Raiders, and the Jaguars.
Yeah, I think that's 2-1 pretty easily, right, at least?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tennessee gets the 49ers, Dolphins, and Texans. So I think they both got one free game to finish the year. It's going to be pretty interesting going down the stretch.
So who you got winning? You're going Colts?
Colts.
Kyle?
I got the Titans, but I think the Colts end up with a wild card spot. They're going to be most likely getting A.J. Brown back this week. If not this week, they'll get him next week. They're kind of figuring out how to fill in the running back position after Derrick Henry's been out, and they'll probably get him in week 18. If not, then he'll be ready for the playoffs.
Man, that would be the epic comeback.
Yeah. Taylor's looking like a league MVP right now, but I mean, Derrick Henry, he's a world beater on that team.
He absolutely is, and he puts them right back into place. Kit, who's your winner?
Colts as well. I think they finally figured out the formula. I know it was real ugly what Wentz did, at least in the last game, but you know, I think they'll...
That was a product of the game, though.
He's had better games than that. The Patriots are obviously a very good pass defense, so I think he's competent enough when you have Jonathan Taylor in that defense.
They have an absolute formula, which is get ahead, possess the ball, don't let you touch it, and then win when the clock goes to zero and just grind it to dust.
The Patriots dang near came back if it weren't for that meddling kid, Jonathan Taylor.
Darn that meddling kid. Okay, Scooby-Doo.
Absolutely saved his fantasy day to you.
Yes, he did.
Much like the Scooby gang that headed out west, we'll go to the AFC West. And Kyle, we got some interesting things going on here. The Chargers are pretty darn good. The Raiders and Broncos are mediocre, but they're still around. And then we got the Chiefs, who seem to have figured it out. What's going on out in the West?
Yeah, after that start from KC, I was like, wow, maybe $500 million was a bit too much too soon for Patrick Mahomes, but it looks like they're starting to turn it around. I mean, he still hasn't been stellar. He's been turning the ball over way more, obviously, than they want him to, and I feel like that's going to be their Achilles heel if anything gets them, but I've still got the Chiefs winning this division.
They absolutely miss JJ's man crush, Sammy Watkins. They miss a competent number two wide receiver. Yes, just a guy who can run a route. It doesn't have to be good. He doesn't have to be a world beater. He just has to run a route. And Mecole Hardman kind of runs around, but he doesn't run a route, and he can't catch reliably. And the rest of the other guys are just fly ball dudes who clear zones. That's just what they are. So it's Kelce, it's Hill, and it's good luck. But they seem to have kind of righted the ship, and they've righted it defensively.
Yeah.
For that reason, I got the Chiefs. I think they're going to win this division going away.
I agree. Yeah, they have added Travis Kelce actually to the COVID list as well. So that's something to watch there. Obviously, Tyreek Hill is going to be the number one receiving option. But
he's on the list too.
Is he? Yeah. Wow, I missed that. So I'm not sure who Patrick Mahomes is going to throw the ball to. He may do what he did in the Super Bowl and just run around for 700 yards in the backfield, but none of it counts for your fantasy team.
A lot of bubble
screens to Hartman.
A lot of bubble screens, yeah.
We'll see if the league ends up moving that game a little bit, because there's players and coaches into the teens again on the protocol list. So we'll see if they end up giving them to Tuesday to get right. That feels like it's probably inevitable at this point, but we'll see what happens. The league has done stranger things.
No doubt.
Kit, who you got winning the West?
I get the Chiefs. It's kind of a shame. The Chargers had that game. If they had won that game, I think it would have been a really fun battle if they were both the same record. I think they would have split the series then, if I'm not mistaken, down the stretch. But I think they have the game lead and the tiebreaker, so it seems pretty inevitable.
Bengals, I feel like the Chargers are a team on the rise, but just a little too early. All right. Let's go to the NFC and check in with the East out there. Dallas is running away, but oh, wait, here come the Beagles. I mean, Eagles. My uncle always called them the Beagles, so I'm stuck with that forever, and that's fine. It was, how'd those darn Beagles do? How'd they do? Well, they did well, and actually, Jalen Hurts had a pretty decent day, despite what people will tell you about this first half, where he had the fumble and the INT. Rob, what do we think of the NFC East here?
I think we're looking at two playoff teams out of the NFC East. It feels gross, but I think the Beagles will sneak in. The Cowboys are probably the worst 10-4 team in the NFL. They haven't looked inspiring, but they keep somehow winning games. Dak has not been impressive. The defense has stepped up a little bit, but I think Cowboys will get in. They are not getting anywhere near the number one seed that's coming to my Packers. Hopefully, fingers crossed. I hope I didn't just jinx it.
Yep.
But who knows, COVID toe again could act up. I think the Eagles are an interesting playoff team this year. And if they can make some trouble in the playoffs, Jalen Hurts is one of those guys who is just frustrating to play defense against. And it could really throw the NFC picture for a loop when it comes to playoff time.
If they have to roll into somewhere cold with that running game, and a team that's going to basically have to wrestle that offensive line 40 times a game, I'm at least giving them a puncher's chance. Yeah. Kyle, who you got winning the East?
I think it'll end up being the Cowboys, and I'm not so sure about the Eagles getting that wild card spot. I mean, there's a lot of good 7-7 teams in the NFC right now, and be interesting to see how it plays out.
Kit, who do you have?
Yeah, I got the Cowboys. Just it's inevitable. I think it's going to come down to, I guess, probably for the Eagles, that Cowboys game, because they get
the last Giants game of the season again.
Yeah, they get the Giants and then back to Washington, which I do have chalked up as two W's. They should be sitting at 9-7 coming into the last week, I think.
It could get interesting, but it probably won't. It's probably going to be the boys. And it pains me to say it, but I think the Eagles slide in. Let's talk about the North, though. Rob, this is your division. We got a 7-7 Minnesota team that probably isn't any good. And then we got the Packers. Packers have to win. I mean, it's mathematical at this point. But do they really have the goods to go all the way?
They do. The Packers are getting healthy at the right time of the season. We'll finally have, going into the playoffs, we'll finally have our O-line healthy for the first time all year. We've not had Bakhtiari at all, I believe.
No, he hasn't played it down.
We play the Browns, the Vikings, the Lions. I think we've got this, especially with how much COVID craziness is going on in Cleveland right now. Yeah. I'd chalk that one up as a game we should win if we execute correctly. We've got a healthy running game, a solid one-two punch. Aaron Jones finally looks like himself. The defense is coming on. We've got a couple DBs coming back from injury as well. So I think the defense will only improve at the right time of year. We're the opposite of the Bengals. We are peaking at the right time, and I don't think we peaked yet. I think we'll continue to get better down the stretch.
As the North doesn't really warrant comment beyond that, I think we're going to move on. And we're just going to skip the South because it's Tampa, because even Tampa's JV team's good enough to beat the rest of the division with a three-game lead. No one's catching them for the win. So let's talk about the West, where everybody's okay except Seattle, who's just bad. But Frisco's 8-6 and actually pretty tough. And then the Rams and Cards are both 10-4. Kit, what do you got out the West? This is interesting.
Yeah, I got the Rams. I really don't trust Cliff Kingsbury. They've been good. Their offense has looked explosive. You know, they've done gotten back to the running game a little bit with Connor, and obviously Kyler Murray is dynamic. But they lost Hopkins, so kind of a reliable weapon, even if he hasn't been, you know, his old school Hopkins self. And their defense, I think, is a good amount worse than the Rams, although I'm looking now and they've let up less points. So I don't know. But I don't know. I guess I trust McVay. I think they have a little bit more sort of pedigree and experience. Haven't looked at the schedules, but my gut would say Rams edge them out.
Robbie, is it no D-Hop, no hope?
I'm looking at the schedule here, and I think the Cardinals will sneak in as the number one seed from the division. They finished with the Colts, the Cowboys, the Seahawks, all games that should be competitive and winnable.
Yeah.
Whereas the Rams have a much tougher schedule. They've got the Vikings, the Ravens, and the 49ers. I just see Arizona winning more of those games, even if they shouldn't. Even if the Rams are the better team here.
We talked about the Rams in detail earlier. Let's talk about Kyler Murray in particular now. Kyle, with Kyler Murray, is it rust we're seeing a little bit, or is it just kind of adjusting to after being off for injury, or is it a combination of having to move on with life without D-Hop?
It is possible to have all of the above, I think. There is certainly, you can tell in his game, he's not as effective scrambling the ball. I think some of it's, you know, coming back from that injury, whether it's up here that he's struggling, you know, if it's mental, like still a little sore, I don't know, it's kind of risky running, or if it's just that he doesn't have as much mobility. Obviously, we'll never know unless he came out and said something, but obviously not having a weapon like D-Hop is enormous. I mean, kind of like we talked about earlier with Patrick Mahomes, you take away Travis Kelce or Tyreek Hill and suddenly he looks human again. You know, they have AJ Green, they have Christian Kirk, but those guys are not DeAndre Hopkins, even if he hasn't been himself this year.
All right, so one word answer, boys. Who wins it? Kit?
No, Rams.
Rob?
Rams. Kyle? Wait, sorry, Cardinals.
Cards for me.
Yeah, I'm going Rams here. I just, they're more sustainable. They're more stable. Been there, done that.
One quick thing. The nice thing is, assuming that the Cardinals win, the Rams would be the number one wild card team. So they would play each other in the first round of the playoffs. Ooh, so we'd really get to see who the better team is.
That's juicy.
Unless they get the overall one, correct?
Right, yeah, and then somebody'd have a bye, but
yeah, we'll fancy. I like
it. I would love to see that.
Oh, dude, that'd be awesome. Great.
Yeah.
That would be great. And what the Rams do travels, so they'd have to go to the desert and do it, but that would be super cool. Speaking of things that are looking on the horizon here, it's time to take our next segment into the running backs for the 2022 class. And with no clear first round, there's no Najee Harris here this year, but there are some significant players that you need to know about. This is a clustered class, and it's a very deep class, and as more and more underclassmen declare, it's getting stronger and stronger. While we don't expect there to be a first-round running back, barring a surprise, there's going to be a very deep second and third round of running backs going. So it's going to be a cluster that you need to pay attention to. And some of the names, I'm just going to read them out so that we all get them on top of mind here, are players that you need to pay attention to because they're definitely going high in fantasy standings. Breece Hall of Iowa State is probably the 101 of running backs here, probably the guy you need to know most. But Kenneth Walker III from Michigan State and Isaiah Spiller from A&M are right behind him. Kyren Williams, Sincere McCormick, Jerome Ford, Brian Robinson of Alabama, and Hassan Haskins are probably in that next tier. And then you get guys who have either have concerns or are one-year wonders, like an Abram Smith from Baylor, who was just an absolute monster this year. But it's his first year as a real running back. He'd been a linebacker and then transitioned into the backfield. Devonta Prince from FIU is an interesting player, a big dude who can fly. Zamir White has done it for years, it feels like, at Georgia. And then James Cook is another guy, another Georgia player. Wheels for days, not real much size, but can catch the ball and kind of fit that pass-catching back. So let's go around here and let's talk about our favorite prospect of the bunch. And Rob, we'll start with you. Who's your favorite?
My favorite is still Breece Hall. I think he was the relatively consensus number one back coming into the offseason. Isaiah Spiller has crept up on him. He's maybe not impressed as much as we would have liked, but I think you're overthinking it here. Breece Hall is going to be a good running back. Isaiah Spiller will also be a good running back, but Breece Hall offers a little bit more upside for me than Spiller, and I can't wait to see where he ends up in the NFL draft.
Kyle, who's your dude?
Yeah, I'm going with Breece Hall as well. I don't think I could put it better than Rob just did.
Yeah, he's Monty 2.0, really. He catches the ball effectively out of the backfield. He's a stout runner that runs well after contact, good size, good speed. Kit, who's your guy?
So I wouldn't take him over Breece Hall or debatably Spiller, but Kenneth Walker is my guy. I know that all the reasons why, you know, analytics are a little bit against him. He wasn't very successful at Wake. He is a little undersized. He hasn't shown the pass catching chops, although sort of evolved my thinking on that. Basically, if you don't have absolute stone hands or completely not pass block, we don't know what's going to happen. I mean, remember the whole knock on Taylor was, oh, he won't be on the field on third downs. He won't have anything. He's going to have 70 catches in the first two seasons of his career combined. But Walker's the guy I like because he looks explosive the way the other guys, I think, don't. Maybe it's because he's smaller that the other guys don't look as explosive, but he makes guys miss in some interesting ways. Maybe that doesn't translate, but he seems to have sort of a sense of vision that I really like, and the body control to match that. So he's the guy that I just like.
I like Walker a lot. He was kind of a victim of circumstance, and when he transferred into Michigan State, he got that lead role and he really took off and found an offense that used everything he can do. He can catch the ball well and is smooth in his routes. He's effective even though they don't throw the ball a whole lot at Michigan State. He was still utilized in the pass game, looked good in the screen game, and can really fly. Isaiah Spiller is more of a banger and was in a timeshare his whole time at A&M with a bevy of the other backs that they had. The two Georgia guys were timeshare dudes. Zamir White's an injury dude because he's got so many touches coming through the college game. And that's another thing I worry a little bit about with Sincere McCormick. Although, dude, the UTSA product, Sincere McCormick, is an absolute beast, runs hard, flies. When you see him playing, even though it's against Conference USA and other Sun Belt Conference opponents, he's just ripping up what's in front of him. So he's been very impressive, and it'll be very interesting to see what he looks like when he gets into the draft process for real. He's already committed to go to the Combine's evaluation games, so it'll be interesting to see what he really looks like. Who's an off-the-top of the pile guy who's like down, further down the list that you're interested in? Kyle, anybody standing out that you think might be cool?
You did mention him, but I do like James Cook out of Georgia. He's of their 1-2 punch with Zamir White and him. He's the guy that can not only run the ball, but he can catch the ball out of the backfield. He kind of does a little bit of everything. It's Dalvin Cook's younger brother, so he's got the pedigree. Obviously not the same person, but the pedigree's there. He's definitely got a good mentor and somebody to talk to that's got league experience and can tell him what to expect from combine, from getting into the league, what to expect as a rookie. So the mental game will be there. He's been at Georgia for 4 years, so he's got good experience in an offense with a coach that has prepared a lot of guys to be ready for the NFL. So I'm excited to see what he can do.
To me, he's this class as Michael Carter. He's that kind of guy that catches the ball effectively. You don't want him touching it more than 10 times on the ground, but can be productive and can be efficient. Kit, who's your further down the list, dude? I know you're a big Sincere guy.
Yeah, yeah, you mentioned it, so I was gonna pass over him. I like McCormick a lot. I'm interested to see what he weighs at. He's listed at 5'9", 205, which would kind of be a decent BMI, especially if that's like 208, because he's not that tall. But that could also just be, you know, college program fluffing, and he could be 195. So I think that's going to be a critical hit for him. But the one I was going to bring up was Kyren Williams. I'm just really interested to see what the NFL thinks of him, where he gets drafted and in what role. I don't think he's, you know, got the type of body type who can be a workhorse, but I wonder if he lands in the right situation, if he could be sort of the plus version of what Michael Carter would be. I saw somebody saying like early career Kenyon Drake, which, you know, maybe isn't that impressive, but just in terms of usage, right, where he's getting, you know, 50 catches a year for his rookie contract, you know, works into that pass catching role, and then enough groundwork to sort of be viable and be sort of the second guy to an early down thumper.
He reminds me a bit of CEH coming out. He's that shorter kind of back, a little squat build, but really good elusiveness, catches the ball very well, tough runner. Again, in that smaller mold, it's an interesting dude. He doesn't have the chops, but then again, they thought CEH was likely to be a top of the round two guy. I still think Kyren Williams is a top of the round two kind of guy. Rob, who do you like?
I like all the names we brought up here. James Cook, I think, can do it in the NFL. He's a satellite plus kind of guy, someone who's a little undersized but can still run the ball. But I wanted to focus on guys that are kind of the opposite of that I think will end up in a committee but are more of a between the tackles punishing kind of runners. And I hate to bring up an Alabama guy, but I think Brian Robinson and Hassan Haskins are gonna both carve out significant roles in an NFL backfield. Haskins coming out of Michigan, Brian Robinson being the guy who stuck around Alabama forever and finally got the backfield to show something this year. And I think they both showed that they are quality running backs that are maybe just lacking the top end speed that you want. They both make smart decisions in the backfield. They both don't offer a ton of upside catching the ball, but I think they're going to get short yardage work, goal line work in the NFL. And I'm interested to see which one of these two guys lands in a backfield situation where they'll get the pass to touches early. That whichever one does that, it's going to be the guy I prefer the most. But I think both of them can contribute immediately fantasy wise.
Yeah, Robinson's an interesting cat because he paid his dues and he hung around. He had to wait out Najee Harris and that ridiculous pile of Alabama running backs till he finally got his shot. And he did the most with his shot, but I think he's more like a Benny Snell type. He's going to be a depth dude. Mm-hmm. I like him, don't get me wrong, but I don't see the top burst. And that's the problem with these bigger dudes. When they don't have the high end, the burst at the end of the play, they're going to be one cut runners that get you 2.5 yards, and that's what they get you.
I don't think he'll look as good behind an NFL offensive line compared to Alabama's. But the comp I saw for Brian Robinson today that I really liked was Javonte Williams without a first step. And I think, yeah, that's...
Which is Benny Snell.
Yeah, that's... hopefully not. Hopefully he's more Javonte Williams than Benny Snell. But hey, Benny Snell is serviceable for a brief period of time.
Dude, there's nothing to take away from Benny Snell. He was an absolute monster in college. And, you know, he was a fourth-round draft pick. So let's not throw too much shade.
That guy hurt my heart when he got to the league. I was excited to see
what he could do in Pittsburgh. I was a Benny Snell guy coming out, and I will still maintain that he is a product of that poor offensive line right now. But unfortunately, it's potential missed. If Robinson ends up in a place where they have a good offensive system, dude, if he ends up going to the Eagles behind that offensive line to replace the Jordan Howard role, he's going to be a stud.
Yeah,
it's just one of those deals. He's got to be in the right spot. Just and the same can be said of Hassan Haskins, because he was in a timeshare pretty much all year at Michigan. But when the other back went down and he had to take over, he has, and he's trucked everything in front of him. So it would be awesome to see him get that opportunity at the next level. So much of this is fit dependent. And we say a lot of this about the guys who are one-year dudes. Abram Smith was awesome at Baylor this year, 1,200 plus yards and a man beast battering ram. But it's a one-year dude, so we'll see what happens. There's a little bit of raw talent. NFL teams are going to be interested in that because it's low touch volume, which means you're getting guys with a lot of tread on the tires, and they're not beat up from having 3 and 4 years of just getting slugged into a line of scrimmage, because we see it in the college game all the time. When dudes are that much better than everybody else around them, it's student body left, student body right. Keep the touches and no one cares. Here you go. Go get us 2 hundo. Jerome Ford is an interesting cat coming out of Cincinnati, and I think we're going to learn a lot about Jerome Ford. this coming bowl season here when they go against Alabama, and we'll see what the Cincinnati back can do against a pretty good Alabama defensive line, because to this point he hasn't played a defensive line of that caliber, and I'm interested to see what he can do. The tape is impressive. He's a bigger dude who can catch the ball, and he's quicker than fast, but he can still play. So it'll be interesting. These are all names that, as fantasy owners, you got to pay attention to. So is there super high star potential here? There's probably three names you really need to know. The Breece Hall, the Kenneth Walker, and the Isaiah Spiller are definitely going to be the cream of the crop here. We'll see where they all land, and that's always the determiner. If you guys could have one that's not in that top three, the guy you got to have, and you're moving heaven and earth to do it, go ahead. Who's your guy? Kyle? You going with Cook?
Yeah, probably, just because I know that he can do all of the things. He's not going to be just a first two downs or just a third down back. He's able to do everything, dependent on landing spot. But yes, I would go with James Cook.
Rob?
Yeah, it's so landing spot dependent with these guys. But if I had to throw my hat in for best value, it's going to be the guy with the most upside here. And I think it's probably Sincere McCormick.
Yeah, I was going to go McCormick as well, just because I do think he'll slip in dynasty drafts as well. I see him probably being a fourth or fifth round NFL draft pick, probably more likely fifth. And, you know, in that case, not from major programs, people might not have heard of him. You know, if you're giving up a mid-third to get a guy who, like, you know, maybe doesn't come on right away, but if given the opportunity, I think has the talent to do something with it, just seems like a good hedge to throw up
there. NFL draft, I see Sincere McCormick anywhere between the third and the fifth round, depending on his measurables and how he does at the Senior Bowl. If he rolls into the Senior Bowl and dominates, he could be this year's Kenny Gainwell. That gets you real value like that. For me, the guy I want that I'm really interested in is Hassan Haskins. The kid has shown me a bunch, and I think there was growth potential in his game that hadn't come out until recently. I feel like the size, the speed, the talent is all there, and you're getting a complete back at a discount rate. We'll see where he lands, but outside of the top five, I think he's the guy you got to target. But that's just me. The Devi Dirtbag, our buddy Ryan Bickerstaff, will have detailed, in-depth stuff about all of these guys. You can find him on YouTube and at our website, Rider Dynasty, and I encourage you to check out everything he puts out. He and I always put out mock drafts, and we put out all kinds of draft info. So between the two of us, check it out. We'll probably do a collaboration on the website here in the not-too-distant future. If draft season is starting to get there, I mean, hey, bask in the glory that is fantasy playoffs. But if the fantasy guides took the dump on your head like they did me this past week, hope springs eternal, folks. Let's see what we can do. All right, fellas, it's time for tags. Kyle, go ahead and lead us off.
Yeah, thanks for letting me join tonight. I had a blast. If you're looking for me on Twitter, you can find me at KAllen_4. And if you're looking for injury updates, don't forget to listen to the Next Man Up Injury Podcast right here under the Rider Dynasty tab. You can find us on our website or anywhere you find your podcasts.
Yeah, I can't recommend that strongly enough. It's an excellent podcast, and you guys really do need to check it out because they do fabulous work. Robbie?
You can find me on Reddit and on Twitter at TheRotoRob. And Kyle? Glad to have you. Haven't talked with you in a while. I know fatherhood's been eating up a lot of time for both of us, but glad to see you. You're in the playoffs and not facing me.
Yes, sir.
Kit.
Hey, you can find me on Twitter at KitV_DynastyFF and on Reddit at KitKit123. Just refresh Twitter constantly while you look out for these COVID updates over the next couple of days. Make sure you don't miss anything critical.
Man, I am with you on that. I'm Don Detweiler. You can find me at Rider Dynasty. The boys will get anything you send to me. Look, bask in the glory. It's this time of year where you make your bucks, you get back everything you put in, and it's not time to coast yet. There's so much work to be done, and in this year, it's more challenging than ever, so make sure your rosters are good. Manage your position and your flex spots efficiently as you can so that you don't get stuck. You know a dude's playing, put him in the position spot so that you can save your butt with the flex if you have to, because if games get flexed to Tuesday, which probably coming, happened last week, the NHL already closed their doors and went to Christmas early. The NBA is starting to look like everybody who's not playing on Christmas is doing the same. So, hey, if the other major sports are sending messages, pay attention. The NHL isn't even going to the Olympics now. So it's one of those deals where this stuff is all real and we still need to be vigilant. And now, for your fantasy sake, you really need to be vigilant. So, hey, the best of luck for you. Remember, we're all pulling for you. Riders, have a great one. Enjoy the games and enjoy the fantasy playoffs. We'll catch you next week or later. Have a blessed holiday. Good luck to you and your family. And we'll catch you again on the Rider Dynasty podcast.